Marcy.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the March 1st, 2017 meeting of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for the Ways and Means Committee. We are in session. Good afternoon to everyone. I am going to open a public hearing for the purpose of taking public testimony on Senate Bill 5527. And we have several people signed up here. Let's see. Anyone from a long ways away?
Tim Josie is. Yeah.
Well, physically, Commissioner, not
Oh, that was
pretty
accurate, but low.
All right, with that, are you signed up to testify?
I did, yes.
Where are we? Oh, there you are. Wow, what? That explains it. All right, Commissioner Josie, and is there anyone else you'd like to bring up with you? Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Mr. Chair Witt and Chair Frederick and members of the committee. I'm Kathy Figley. I'm the mayor of the city of Woodburn, well known as a city that sometimes is not a completely enthusiastic cheerleader either for this agency or for the land use system. But I'm here to testify in favor of the bill. Let me tell you some things that DLCD staff have done for us that were not just business as usual. Number one, they helped facilitate a mediation that was unique, really rather a first, that led Woodburn to the end of an almost 14-year fight to add additional industrial land to our urban growth boundary. We appreciate that. It was above and beyond the call of duty. What was even more beyond the call of duty was the fact that the mediation only led to an agreement to agree. So agency staff, the parties, the opponents, as you would, to our expansion, and we had a stack of findings we had to rely on to come to a conclusion very different from the conclusion that we had gotten through LCDC twice before. That was something that took hard work. It took, I know, personal skills. It took legal knowledge. And it took really a lot of getting to yes to finally allow the city of Woodburn, Marion County, the agency, and LCDC to come to a conclusion that has allowed us to expand our industrial base. The agency has also offered us help in updating our targeted industries analysis, which became stale dated due to the fact that our process went on so long. And finally, they have offered us help, as help is available to any city, on more mundane things, but important things that matter to communities. They matter certainly to a medium-sized community like Woodburn, but even more so for our tiny neighbors who don't have the resources to do it themselves. And that includes longer range, the higher altitude planning that we need to start with in order to make informed choices as we grow and change. Woodburn received a TGM grant a number of years ago to look at its downtown, assess public interest, public priorities, and community values. We later received one for the 99E corridor, and again, we're able to take a look that we believe is going to lead to good long-range planning. So I'd like to make it clear that, in my opinion, even though we've had difference of opinion and challenges sometimes in working with this agency, they have also been proactive, professional, and have offered us a great deal of value as a community, and we appreciate it. So that's why I'm here to express my support.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you. It's good to see you.
I'm Tim Josie, Tillamook County Commissioner. This is my 19th year, and I spent 8 years in the Oregon Legislature. Fred and I served together, and he didn't recognize me when I walked up there, which means I'm getting old, but then so are you. So I served for 10 years on LCDC, which is 2 years longer than I should have. Didn't really want to serve at all, but, you know, there are certain things that you have to do because you believe in the system, and so I stepped up. And I served the final 2 years of an existing term, which is the reason why I ended up serving for 10 years. I'm a firm believer in our land use system. And so that's the reason why I served, and I have no regrets. But serving, I saw firsthand some of the issues. It's just gotten too complex, and it's hard to get anything done anymore. But it's up to you folks to figure out how to fix that. Good intentions sometimes go awry, but that's the only thing I'm going to say negative, but that's really not against the department. They're upholding the rules, and I think they do a great job. I want to spend some time talking about what DLCD is doing in my neck of the woods in Tillamook County. Specifically, I want to spend some time talking about Patrick Wingard. He's the North Coast Regional Representative for DLCD, and he's been absolutely critical to Tillamook County's Community Development Department successes. And I'll just go through some quick bullets. Patrick has helped us secure grant funding to complete a code modernization project, served on the advisory committee for implementation of Senate Bill 1517, a first-of-its-kind land use plan. Mark Labhart, former county commissioner, got that started. I'm stuck carrying that thing forward, and so we'll see how that works. And then he helped train a new staff, and I'll just throw this in. If the department still steals one more of our staff that they have trained, Jim is going to rue the day. So anyway, we have a great staff, and Patrick has done an awful lot to bring them on and also help with our commission and some trainings. And, you know, our planning commission used to be pretty amateurish, but now they are really good, and I'm really impressed with the way they conduct themselves. And I think it's because of Patrick's help with them, teaching them how to run meetings and actually look at the criteria and follow the procedures. And then help train our planning commission, so I've talked about that, represented DLCD and the county with the Port of Tillamook Bay Master Plan, advocated for the county's best interest in numerous land use hearings, including the NESCO and Coastal Hazards Adaptation Plan. This is a big deal for us in NESCO because NESCO is slowly going into the ocean, and so we've set up some provisions to help mollify some of those issues. It doesn't go far enough, but we went absolutely as far as the public would allow, and so I think it's going to be a model for the rest of the coast. He made himself available for technical assistance at nearly any time, even during evening hours when we have planning commission hearings. DLCD is working with us on our natural hazard mitigation plan, which is a big, big deal. DLCD is working with us on the NOAA tsunami project. DLCD is funding Beat the Wave modeling for several unincorporated communities in Tillamook County. The next step will be to work with the county to include tsunami resilience measures in the county plan. So in short, Tillamook County owes a huge portion of its success to the relationships with DLCD. Oregon's land use program is rigorous, and rural counties are in a tough spot to implement this program without thoughtful guidance and assistance, and they come through in spades. I sincerely hope that DLCD is able to maintain its funding because we rely heavily on those resources to implement this important program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Subcommittee members, Senator Girard.
I'm going to give the good commissioner a softball question. You said something initially about DLCD, and you know how we have one set of land use laws for the entire state. Do you think that works in your county?
It works a lot better in my county than it does some of the rural counties over on the east side. I would say it works in my county. We, you know, it's really important that we protect our natural resource lands, whether they're dairy or forestry. And so I think it works really well for us. But I, you know, I remember when I was on LCDC and having, we went all over the state, and we were over in on some land that was zoned ag and in out of the Bend area, and it was just rocks and brush. There was no way that this could be ever utilized for anything. I mean, it couldn't be used for agriculture. And so, yeah, there's some issues there that need to be dealt with.
I have to say, I did serve with Tim, and things were a lot more fun when back in '93 when we were serving.
We actually got along.
Yeah, we did.
I'm sure that happens today, too. Well, thank you very much.
I think we have some more questions, actually. Representative Esquivel.
Actually, I wanted to share some information. In Jackson County, they wanted to be one of the first people to comply with LCDC when it first came on in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And they did a broad brush approach to all their zoning, which the intent was to go back and reevaluate those lands, but they never did. And so those lands today, you said you had some EFU land over on Bend that was rocks. We have the same thing in Jackson County. There's no chance of getting irrigation. It's very good for growing rocks and black widows, but other than that, it's not very productive. But that was due to our compliance and wanting to comply with the LCDC when they first started.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the same thing in Bend? Is that what it was?
Well, I can't speak for Bend. I can just only speak to that one experience in Bend. But, yeah, I think that they've had some land use issues that they've had to work through, and the system gets in their way at times.
Okay.
Additional questions or comments? Thank you both very, very much. I'd like to call up next, please, David Klein and Sean Levine. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is David Klein. I'm the city manager for the City of Independence, and with me is Sean Irvine, the economic development and innovation director for the city, and many other hats since we're relatively small. We're here in support of the Senate Bill 55 as well. And I think you've seen, I think you have actually the imagery of a project that we're working on. I think it came to you in your packets. And one of the things that we're really proud of where we are, and thank you to DLCD for helping us get there. The city has had a property in its core, downtown core, that's been in a mining operation and concrete aggregate mix site for a very long time. In fact, so long that when we ultimately acquired the property, there were 99-year railroad licenses that were affixed to the property that had lapsed from time, over time, when we acquired it. So for many a year, it was an industrial site adjacent and directly within our downtown, and of course right on the river. We have, over the years, done a lot of planning surrounding the opportunities with our historic downtown, and that site has always been an opportunity acquisition if we could ever get it. That opportunity kind of came through in 2014, 2013, and largely with the help of DLCD, we were able to do some good planning across the site, and we ultimately acquired the site. And Sean will tell you a little bit more about the details of how the actual work that the support that we got from the agency. We today are at the point of having done a great deal of redevelopment on the site. We're about we have $1.5 million into it at this point, plus another $2.5 million or so of public work that is under contract and through financing of the state. And so there'll be roughly $4 million from the city in this, and what we will have received from our efforts, it appears, is a $42 million private development, inclusive of a boutique hotel and downtown riverfront residential property. So for a community like Independence, that is just a huge, huge hit. I mean, that's a legacy project in our community and a real game changer. getting that kind of lodging in our part of the world. We view that as sort of our entree to becoming really the sort of the destination community for the wine industry, agritourism, and the like in our area, support our college and its demands for overnights. And just be a sort of central to the economy and help grow the economy in that area. So I'm going to let Sean give you some of the particulars of how that partnership has worked, and then I'm really happy to take any questions. And I kind of want to touch base with you on an auxiliary issue as well.
But. So I think to back up a tiny bit, you know, we've had a lot of success. If you know anything about Independence, we're all about planning. We're about action.
Sean, excuse me, but would you please introduce yourself for the
record?
Excuse
me. Sorry about that. I'm Sean Irvine. I'm the Economic Development Director for City of Independence. As David mentioned, I wear a lot of other hats, too, because it's a small town. But, you know, if you know anything about us, we're about planning, and then we're about implementing those plans. And if you know anything about us, you know we've actually been pretty successful with our revitalization efforts the last 15, 20 years. DLCD has been with us every step of that way, helping us make those plans. And this was really a good case of, you know, having a good relationship and being able to work with that relationship. As David mentioned, since 1996, we've been looking at this site saying, hey, this would be a great redevelopment opportunity. It's right downtown, 1,000 feet of frontage on the Willamette. It's next to our amphitheater. It's next to our new city hall, backs up to Main Street. Finally comes up on the market. We say, okay, what do we do with this? You know, this is way bigger than anything we've ever done before. So we went to DLCD and said, hey, can we get a quick response grant from TGM, figure out what the best redevelopment mix of redevelopment uses for this site would be to create the best impact, not just on our downtown, not just on our community, but on the region. So DLCD worked with us to develop a market analysis, look at the land use planning, look at the transportation issues, and develop a conceptual plan for this site. Based on that result, I really did confirm the opportunity for the hotel, the opportunity for the property, and gave us the confidence to move forward and actually acquire the property and begin working on it. You know, as David said, to that end, we continued working with DLCD. They helped us with that. We had to develop a new zone for that property. DLCD helped give us some advice on how to do that. And really, that has led to this development that we have at hand here. And, I can't emphasize enough, this project that we're working on is a big, big, big thing for a community our size, and frankly is a risk. And to have this concept plan developed where we've done this analysis and we actually have a leg to stand on when we talk to people about it is really invaluable. And just to tag on to what David said about the development, you know, so it's a boutique hotel, you've got apartments, some related commercial, $42 million total development. When it's done, it's going to bring $6 million of spending to Independence. That is going to, you think about what that's going to do to the rest of the downtown. It's also going to create about 100 jobs. And for a small community like ours, that's just, again, a really big impact. So I think, you know, really that's the message that we want to get across is they do have, you know, planning, it's easy to say, well, planning, you stick it on a shelf. You never really see anything that happens from it. This is something that's really happening from plans that we've worked with DLCD to create. And honestly, we've got plenty of other great stories, too, but I know we only have a certain amount of time.
So let's just wrap with just a couple more thoughts, and then if you have questions. DLCD, of course, what we're talking about is brings resources to the table. What they also bring is an attitude of partnership, and that is just invaluable to us. And frankly, it doesn't stop at DLCD. I mean, that has been the attitude we've had throughout the state as a partner throughout this. Regional Solutions has listed us as a high-priority project. DEQ has worked with us on mitigation issues. It has just been a great partnership from the get-go. And just one final little thought, we can't do this without urban renewal, and I know that's not on the table today, but if you have that conversation at some point, urban renewal is what gives rural Oregon a chance to compete, you know, with urban Oregon.
Thank you very much. And for the record, those most recent comments were from David Klein. Subcommittee members, anything for our guests? Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate your appearance and your comments.
Thank you.
Call up next, please, Becky Steckler and Sean Cleave. Good afternoon to both of you and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. Co-chairs Witt and Frederick and the rest of the committee. My name is Becky Steckler, and I am the Program and Policy Manager for the Oregon Chapter of the American Planning Association. We submitted testimony last week where we stated our support for DLCD's budget and respectfully asked for increased funding to restore the three staff positions. I think the previous testimony has really attested to the value of the staff that is at DLCD in providing services to local jurisdictions. We've also asked for the restoration of planning assistance grants and technical assistance grants from exclusively focusing on the coast to also being provided around the state. And then finally, I just wanted to say that we had been encouraged previously in a policy option package that had not been included in the governor's budget, but that would address affordable housing and that would have supported two positions at DLCD and the Oregon Housing and Community Services. And we would still support those because of the housing crisis we see in so many communities around the state. I think Director Rue said it best yesterday when he said that if local governments can't plan, this program doesn't work. And planning really does happen in Oregon at the local level. As you all know, Oregon has the 19 statewide goals that cities and counties must incorporate into their comprehensive plans. And the state has recognized the burden that this can place on local jurisdictions, but realizes that the benefits of these planning activities are really critical in building great communities throughout the state and protecting what's important to all Oregonians, from planning from jobs and economic development, needed housing, preserving farm and forest land, protecting our air and water, and protecting the people and property from natural hazards, among so many other things. The need is great and only getting greater as more and more people move to Oregon and as technology is changing our economy and as well as how we move around, our transportation and how we communicate, as well as impacts of climate change that are being felt by wildly shifting climate patterns that deliver years of drought and then a deluge of rain and snow. Really, most importantly, these changes, as well as the steady progression of time, are really beating down some of the most expensive investments in our community, such as the streets and roads, water and sewer pipes, and the treatment facilities for those, and as well as other infrastructure. Planning is critical now more than ever. The DLCD testimony yesterday and the day before, I think, gives you a degree, a limited degree of the state of local comprehensive plans. And really that cities and counties have updated their comprehensive plans whenever resources become available, and it's usually on a piecemeal basis. Many cities and counties have an updated transportation element because of the direct need to really plan for those infrastructure, for those roads and for active transportation for bikes and peds. But many housing elements might be woefully out of date. Many of the natural hazards elements of comprehensive plans have not been updated in 10, 20, or maybe even 30 years. Back in 1999, the legislature passed Senate Bill 543, which exempted small jurisdictions from having to conduct periodic review to really comprehensively update their comprehensive plans. This was actually my final project getting out of graduate school, is looking at the impact of this, of slowly kind of that disinvestment in the plans, at least from the statewide level, and the impact that that had. And really, I would say, and you saw some of the amount of money that's been dedicated from the state to locals over time on some of those local grants, and it's gone down as well. Staffing has gone down over the years, a kind of constant chipping away. And really, the state technical assistance grants are critical for getting the work done. I wanted to give you a few examples when I talked to my members from around the state. Wallowa County received a $30,000 technical assistance grant for to update a or to create a community wildfire protection plan in the last biennium. And that their yearly budget for planning is about $60,000. And that pays for not even a full-time planning director as well as other staff. Their natural hazard element of their comprehensive plan hadn't been updated since 2001, and it didn't even mention wildfire. It only mentioned floods. And so we all know what kind of devastation can happen from a wildfire in Oregon. And so this kind of planning is really critical to for the resiliency of the county and its ability to protect its people and property. On another level, the city of Prineville also received a grant in the last biennium, a $35,000 grant for a water master plan update. And according to their planning director, the last plan hadn't been updated since 2006, and it did not envision that Facebook and Apple would be locating 2 million square feet of data centers that would require water for cooling. And so they really were very behind the times on how do you plan for this infrastructure to really support the jobs and the employers that want to locate in our communities. So technology is really changing the way are making many of these plans obsolete, and we need to plan for that so that our communities can be at a competitive advantage and be prepared for these kinds of employers. I would say that what the DLCD technical assistance grants often do is leverage additional resources. The mayor of Woodburn mentioned that there was a grant to update their target industry analysis, and DLCD provided $5,000. But that was then coupled with funding from Marion County, as well as money from the city and the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, and they all kicked in so that they could update that industry analysis so they could actually start to really be prepared for the employment that they were planning for back during their whole UGB expansion process, and really then see those jobs come to the city of Woodburn. Something similar in Washington County, where part of the $45,000 in the technical assistance grants and money from the county was then used to leverage and apply for federal grants. So it's helping to bring other resources together so that they can do the planning they need. So I would say that the needs are great and the resources are few, but really cities and counties across the state must plan if they want to be economically competitive and plan for efficiently and effectively for infrastructure investments and really address the affordable housing crisis we find ourselves in. I guess the final thought I would like to leave is that I think everyone's got their fingers crossed that the legislature is going to pass a transportation package this session. You know the desperate need for Oregon to maintain its roads, as well as address transit funding and improve bicycle and pedestrian safety, and to relieve congestion, as well as become more resilient to the Cascadia earthquake. A lack of land use planning will undermine these investments, and this planning is really critical to ensure that what we do on the land use side is really supportive of the investments we're making in that transportation system. Planning across the state is critical now more than ever, and the staff resources and the technical assistance and planning grants that DLCD provides is just a really critical component of that. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Sean?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Sean Cleave. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Oregon Association of Realtors. What a tough act to follow. Well said. I don't want to waste the committee's time with my lack of knowledge on all the things the commission does. I just want to say that we have full confidence in the director and his deputy. We did go into rulemaking based on some housing issues that we adopted in the 16th session. They were fabulous to work with. While that was quite a bit of time spent, it was over a shorter period of time than you would have expected for a complicated and controversial issue. We would have also have liked to have seen the POP with some housing positions added to the commission or to the department, but times being as they are, I think that this committee might want to continue to look at those things either this session or down the road. And with that, I will answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I'm not seeing any of the subcommittee members with anything at this time. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up, please, Mark Nystrom and Aaron Doyle. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mark elected me to go first. So Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I was going to say about as much as Becky did and then add on to it, so I'll try just to do the add-on part. The DLCD is a one partner out of many that cities depend on to do a lot of the things that you guys have talked about in the last couple of days. But for long-range planning and development across the state, it is a vital partner for our cities and our all local governments. This partnership has been developing over time, and in the last few years, there's been an increased change at the department towards working as an early partner as opposed to a later come in and examine a branch of government when it comes to working with cities on their UGBs, housing analysis, projects, and thoughts like UGB streamlining, population forecasting, how to get that type of long-range planning done. And we're concerned that the current budget, as it sits, losing those three positions, we're going to lose some of that proactive work by the department. While I understand that this is a difficult budget year, and with DLCD primarily funded out of general funds, this is an easy department to target for reductions, but cuts here will be felt throughout the state and in a variety of stated goals on economic development, housing, and preservation of natural resources that this legislature has come forward with. Local governments are also looking at bigger hurdles in the near future, where DLCD has already started to be an active partner, such as the floodplain regulations that are going to come down from the federal government due to the biological opinion related to the National Flood Insurance Program. There is a deeper understanding of major seismic event probability occurring on the coast and having impacts across the state, not just on the coast, and the deepening housing crisis across the state. On the base budget, the technical assistance, I think you've heard from the local government officials who have come in before this, that technical assistance that's not attached to grant funding has been vital to the success of doing those types of projects, be they a UGB expansion or even just a small development within the UGB, or what actually is a large development within the UGB. And a loss of a regional expert in particular will have a profound impact across the state, because those regional people are our go-to person for our local governments to turn to when they need a question answered by a DLCD or some direction on how to get something accomplished. My biggest concern is where that regional person will come from. And if it's in Eastern Oregon, we already have so few resources out there, and taking that person away from the regional solutions table will be a significant burden to those cities that are trying to be competitive with places like Idaho that have far more relaxed concepts of development. And in addition to that, and I'll let Mark talk more about this because it's a bigger county impact, but the sage-grouse concerns that have been ongoing and the state has been an important partner on, if we lose that regional person out there, that will have a significant impact as well. In addition, I've been with the League since 2013, and we've looked at a lot of different bills relating to how the land use process is or is not working and what local governments are or are not accomplishing related to things like natural hazards planning, housing, industrial land needs. And if we're taking away that technical support, I don't think we can do a better job. I think we'll actually be slower, and it'll be more difficult for local governments to work through those processes. On top of that, it's the barrel of laughs today. We have lost periodic review as a tool that is in our toolbox and a requirement under state law, as we've seen fewer and fewer funds being made available. This past summer, or past year, I should say, I surveyed our members regarding periodic review. There's a limited number of cities that are required to enter into periodic review, and there's a schedule that's supposed to be set by the commission, and that schedule has drastically slowed down. My predecessor was an extremely good paper collector, and I went through her notes this morning, and looking at the cities that were going to be scheduled and the plan to schedule out periodic review starting in 2007, and I would say that most of those cities have fallen off that list because that list has disappeared. Periodic review is what ensures that we're updating things like our economic opportunities analysis, our housing needs analysis, our UGBs, our public facility plans, all of those big picture things, but it's also making sure that we're doing good governance when we do our land use process. And cutting the grants program, but also cutting the technical assistance, really will stop that periodic review from moving forward. And it's not that cities don't want to do it. It's that they don't know if they have the resources to do it on their own. Because what it takes is extra funding and extra technical assistance from the department to either hire those experts outside of the city so that we can continue to do our day-to-day land use planning that we're still required to do on top of our periodic review in order to get those needs analysis done. That trend is continuing downward, and we'd really like to see that opportunity open back up for those cities that really want to engage in updating their comprehensive land use plans. And the final thing on the budget as a whole is losing the planners at the department. Those two positions that are specialized planners means that it's going to slow down the review of local government decisions and less likely for us to partner with them early, and therefore more likely to face challenges if we don't do things correctly, which will slow down the overall development process, which is never a good thing.
I want to touch briefly on the TGM grant program that's different than a general fund grant program, TGM Transportation Growth Management. I apologize. That is a partnership between DLCD and ODOT that uses federal funds to create grants and funding opportunities for local governments to do transportation planning. It also provides with code assistance and direct outreach on quick projects that can be turned around that have some tie of how we're planning our transportation system and how we're doing our land use planning. And that program has proved invaluable for maintaining our transportation plan updates, but also to think creatively about things like parking in your main downtown area, see if that's inhibiting or encouraging economic development, or cutting parking in order to increase the number of units you can get out of house without having, or a housing development without having land wasted and cost wasted related to parking. So that TGM grant program is a strong partnership with local governments and the state to get things done. The last general thing I talk about is the state's natural hazard mitigation plan, which the LCD is now kind of taking the laboring oar on, is vital for leveraging FEMA funds should a disaster occur. That state mitigation plan means that we'll have access to additional monies to respond to any disaster because we've taken the proactive steps of trying to mitigate. And from that plan, the local governments can plan off that plan. So generally at the county level, those natural hazard mitigation plans are done, which will then allow those local governments to access more money out of FEMA should a disaster like a flood or wildfire occur. And that's an important function overall for the government, the state, but it's also important for the locals that we can work together to better understand the natural hazards that our state is facing. On the general fund grants, I just kind of wanted to give a rundown of what those grants currently pay for and why we're concerned about taking all of the money out to the coast and the services and the things that we've been able to leverage, which I think you heard a lot about from Becky Steckler with OAPA, so I won't belabor those points. But the first cut of those dollars is straight to the population forecasting program. This was something that we did in 2013. It was part of my introduction to land use in Oregon, so it was very exciting to learn about how population forecasts are used. The population forecast is the foundation for all of the long-term planning because you need to know how many people to plan for in order to do the planning. Right now, the cut from the general fund grants to pay for that population forecasting in the 15-17 biennium was $570,000. We're hoping that will come down a little bit as PSU has now done the entire, will have completed the entire state by the end of the 27 or by the end of the biennium, and we'll be able to readjust how many counties get done at one time, so they'll be able to spread those costs a little more over all 4 years. But that's a major chunk of the money, and that money is statutorily mandated to go to that first. After that, the monies that are there are then, there's a general fund grant guide committee who makes recommendations to LCDC, the commission, about how to expend the rest of the dollars in that, in the general fund grant program. And the first thing that we always do is set aside $1,000 for every city under 2,500 and now $4,000 for every county under 15,000 in population as a just, here is a form, fill it out, we'll send you a check. You do some planning with it. And those dollars are vital for those communities. They are not big. They don't have a planner on staff. They are maybe going to be able to use that money to leverage a conversation at the local level about what things would you like to see happening in our community to maybe leverage some economic development or increase the amount of housing that's available. What are the planning issues that you see our community needing to address? And in 2015-2017 biennium, that total amount of money was $116,000 that went out to those smaller communities. Not every community takes the dollars. I don't know why. I ask. They say we can't use it. But that's a large number of those communities getting a little bit of help to do a little bit of planning. Next, there's an off the top $20,000 to go to the dispute resolution program, which actually allows the Oregon Consensus to come in and sort of review cases that go to LUBA and prevent further litigation by working to mediate a solution. So it helps LUBA's budget, it helps DLCD's budget, it helps our local budgets as we don't have to face long-term litigation if the dispute is ripe for that type of mediation. It's vital for those projects that are able to see the value in that. But of course, anyone and any legal party can decline to be part of that dispute resolution process. But it's a helpful amount of money to accomplish that.
Aaron, if we could allow Representative Helm to jump in here, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Aaron, for that comment. And I've been baffled over the years at how infrequently the mediation has been utilized when it seems to me to be such a useful tool, especially between at the LUBA level in between parties that are frequent flyers, you might say. Is there anything beyond money that beyond the budget that you can think of that could incent programmatically, maybe at the city level, at the city's level, an encouragement to mediate or otherwise?
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, Representative Helm, I'll have to think on that a little bit further. I think one of the things that's maybe going to help is if DLCD is capable of starting their early intervention, because it leaves people open to the point where if they're finalizing decisions, if they've started out having those conversations early to maybe avoid being in litigation altogether. But when it comes to the mediation, some of it might be just advertising the availability of the program and the successes of the program a little bit more strongly. I don't know if there's an opportunity with having discussions with LUBA and DLCD at the same time of saying, hey, there's this alternative path that might get you done faster. But I'd have to think to be more comprehensively capable of answering your question.
If we wouldn't follow up.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've sometimes wondered what it might be like to have a requirement that an explicit requirement that attorneys notify their clients that they've received that little blue sheet from LUBA when an appeal is filed and responded to by LUBA.
I will decline to answer for the bar at this time.
Thank you. Very diplomatic of you.
I appreciate that thought. The next piece, if I may, is the GORGE assistance, which I will leave again to Mark to talk about. But that's also vital for getting local level planning done within those three communities that are in the National Scenic Area. Again, when a federal overlay comes in, it's very difficult for us to work at the local level without sufficient funding to maintain that local control. And then the last piece of the money is always the remainder. And this year, the remainder was $575,000 that went to both periodic review and technical assistance grants. And these are the dollars that would probably best go towards what the governor's budget recommended of going out to the state. Within that advisory group that I mentioned earlier, we do a ranking of what the priorities for those dollars should be. Then we make that recommendation to the Land Conservation and Development Commission, and the commission can choose to accept our recommendation or not. In the 2015-2017 biennium, we added natural hazard planning as a pretty high up of the top five reasons for granting these grants. It became number three, number one being economic development, because that's always what the program has been directed at, in addition to some of the bills that have passed about regional projects of importance that are directed at economic development for all grants across the state. That overlay was brought in. And so number one are economic development. The next is code streamlining, and then natural resources or natural hazard planning. So to address the one of the questions that you had, Co-Chair Witt, yesterday about the economic opportunities analysis, that tool for of the grants that were accepted under the technical assistance program, the top four grant or the four out of the five grant getters were to complete those economic opportunity analyses. So this is how we pay for that in order to get that KPM back on track and address the question that you had of why aren't we doing this. I think that economic opportunity analysis is usually the first step in looking at what your land looks like and how much you have. There are a ton of things that come after that that we work with Business Oregon and some other folks to try and get infrastructure, wetland mitigation, all of the other things that we have to do. Because it's not just having the land, it's having that land shovel ready, which is the big expensive hurdle that we have to get. But having those EOAs done is the right step in identifying where those lands are. And to address some of the other comments that were made, sometimes the EOA, I don't know this exactly, but in looking at what in the metro region, for example, where most of those large cities that are required to have those done more often, cities over 25,000 in population, Metro did a really comprehensive look at what those large lot industrial things are in those areas, which covers a number of those cities. So it might not be that the EOA was done as would be reflected in the KPM, but that there is not a lack of consideration of what industrial lands are available and what's impeding them from development. In addition, there were a couple of grants that were provided for natural hazards planning. So I've been thinking about this as I've gone and talked to each of you about our concerns about sweeping those funds out to the coast and taking away pretty much everything but the population forecast dollars and putting them into the seismic and coastal plan. And it might be that instead of sweeping every single dollar out there, we take a studied look at those smaller set-asides and make sure that they stay there and then reprioritize those technical grants towards the coast so that those cities and counties that are ready to do that level of planning have the Dogami maps already in place, have worked through that piece of it, would then be prioritized in the grant getters. Instead of just coming in with a complaint, I thought I'd try a solution, throw it up against the wall and see if it stuck. I said a lot. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate your consideration.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, I'm Mark Nystrom from the Association of Oregon Counties. I have the advantage of going after Becky and Aaron, and so I don't have nearly as much to say. Wonderful job. I want to talk a little bit about the general fund grants and the impact on counties of sweeping it out to the coast. Of course, we represent the coastal counties as well, so we're in a position where it's a delicate balance. But I went to the three counties that represent the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area. You'll find in your on OLIS there's a written testimony from Wasco County, and I'd like just to recommend reading that. Talked to another one of the counties, and the planning director there explained that again, the National Scenic Area puts another overlay on planning. So what ends up happening is 5 to 6% of their reviews are inside this National Scenic Area, but it just takes so much time to go through these reviews. They just don't have the staff time to do it. So they're using the money that comes through these general fund grants to hire a consultant to come in and help with those programs. If they lost this funding, they would lose local control. They would have to turn this program back over to the Gorge Commission and would probably no longer be able to do this locally. As a great example of what kind of impacts that would have is $32 million has recently been set aside to redo a segment of the historic Columbia River Highway. He would have to put that project on hold indefinitely until they could find the $5,000 to $8,000 it would take to review those plans. So you can see that the impact of these funds have a ripple effect through the economy. I wanted to talk a little bit about the technical assistance grants. Again, rather than me telling someone else's story for you, I'd just like you to refer to Harney County's testimony. They're talking a lot about the sage-grouse, all the work that Judge Grasty led over the past few years, and now Judge Runnels is going to continue that, holding that mantle. Without the assistance of DLCD, all the work that was done out there couldn't have happened. They need those extra technical assistance grants to address those needs, and that balance that they found between land use and conservation and economic development is tenuous, And it's something that everyone should be proud of, but it's something that we need to hold on to. Looking at the small county grants, we have several examples. Again, Harney County has an example in theirs. But I'd also like to just point out that Morrow County has contacted me and said, well, we've already anticipated having those dollars. We've communicated with not only the small county, but the small cities inside the county. And we're going to pool our money and work together on some projects. So those dollars are really, really important to us. When looking at the coast, because of course the coast is has got some interest here, one of the planning directors that I talked to said that while they're really excited about the possibility of these dollars coming, they weren't sure if they had shovel-ready projects ready to go. So and recommended in a very diplomatic way that perhaps a more comprehensive look at what's needed before we start offering money to those programs or to those counties would be important. But when I spoke to other counties, they're talking about just general capacity. Being able to actually deal with day-to-day planning is a concern, and so for them to be looking at disaster resilience, that's something of a struggle. They were talking about the fact that they don't have enough money to deal with day-to-day planning needs, so they're raising fees. Well, people can't afford those raised fees, so that they just decide to build and go ahead and develop anyway. So then they have non-compliance issues, and then they're going to court, and the people are being fined, and they're still non-compliant. So addressing these issues up front by making sure that they have enough dollars to just handle the day-to-day business, it would be great. And that's where those lack of, in the base budget, just having the technical assistance and staffing help really come into play. So I didn't hear from any county on the coast. I heard from most of the coastal counties that said, yes, we absolutely need all these dollars to be sent to us and only us. They all acknowledged that if they had projects, they would like to write a grant proposal and go after money through those general fund grants. But they really did feel as if it's having good planning across the state is important as just focusing in on the coast. The last thing I would say is I went to the University of Oregon and talked to them about the planning that they're doing. If you talk to them, there's just an amazing list of collaborations between the university, FEMA, NOAA, DLCD, Dogami, and the Office of Emergency Management. There is a lot of really good quality programs that are going on, and those are because those communities are ready, and those communities are taking things in step. And so while we have a lot of work to do, we are doing a lot of really good work. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Anything from the subcommittee? Yes, Co-Chair Frederick, please.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for the possible solution suggestion. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. I'd like to call up, please, Mary Kyle and Peggy Lynch.
Good afternoon, Chairs Frederick and Witt and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We agree with the things that have already been said to you by local governments about the importance of the various grant funds and full funding of the staff positions at DLCD and the importance of those to local communities. We're here today to focus on a request for additional funding that's also been mentioned for a housing position or two at DLCD to help implement Oregon's Land Use Planning Goal 10, housing. I understand the budget you're in and the realities of this request, but I think it's important to mention it anyway. There's been a lot of attention paid to the so-called housing crisis in the Portland metropolitan region, but I think that masks two facts. First is that all of Oregon's communities are facing affordable housing issues, not just the Portland region. And the second is that this is not a situation that developed overnight, as the word crisis sometimes implies. It was slow and growing, and it's going to take us a while and a lot of tools to get out of it. And Oregon's land use planning program plays a key role in the solutions to the needs of all for affordable and safe housing. Goal 10 requires that every city zone sufficient residential land to meet the needs of all of their residents. That means diverse housing types, single family, multifamily, attached housing, and in the locations where it's appropriate, near jobs, near transportation, infrastructure, and choices. But many land use plans are woefully out of date and do not reflect changing population and demographic variables. And many have unintentional and some may say intentional barriers to creating more housing. And that's because cities simply don't have the staff. Many of them don't have the budget or staff to do this. Creating a position at DLCD to focus on technical assistance to local governments on housing is actually a cost-saving measure for local governments. That one person at DLCD can save local governments the need to hire a consultant or add staff in order to address housing issues. DLCD's initial budget request, made in the fall of 2016, included a joint request with the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department for two positions to provide technical support and tools to local governments to help them meet their housing needs. We support that request, and we actually think the idea of those two agencies working together very intentionally is a wonderful idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm disappointed. I was hoping I was going to sit next to John Chandler. In some things, we actually do work together on. The League of Women Voters of Oregon first studied land use in 1959 and has been active in supporting our statewide land use planning program with local implementation.
Peggy, could you
I'm sorry. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon.
You.
Sorry. Mr. Co-chairs, members of the committee, we believe that Goal 1 requires open access to the land use process and that all citizens have a stake in the development of their communities. My letter is online. I'm not going to read through the entire thing, but I wanted to make sure that you had in hand slide 4 from the DLCD presentation. It, to me, is the message about our land use planning program. The League believes this department is critical to the health and well-being of Oregonians. As we plan our cities and counties, we are deciding where we will all live, where we will all work, where we all shop, where we play, and how we'll get there. Those are the foundational things of our daily lives. So I wanted to make sure that as you saw, that you saw this linkage amongst all those things. And you have heard it in many different voices in the testimony that you've heard before me. You've heard the importance of local government grants, and we have always supported asking for additional money for local government grants. But we get the situation that you are in budget-wise. So the other message that you heard is, although we want more local government grant monies, we know the importance of the DLCD staff in accomplishing things. And if the choice is between the general funds for grants or field staff, we pick the staff. And part of the reason is that they do things like provide model codes that can then be used in many local communities, and those local communities can massage those model codes to fit their needs. But it's very efficient, and it gets things accomplished. So if we cannot find additional revenue for state services in this session, and we hope that you will, but if you can't, staff to us is probably the greater stretch of those dollars than the local government grants. We also would rather have more money for attorney general services, because like all the natural resource agencies, this is a complaint-driven enforcement situation, and without the enforcement, there is no program. We certainly support the concept of the coastal resilience planning. We came in 2015 and asked for more natural hazards planning, so we believe that that's true. And you will also hear us support the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries works related to hazards planning. It is that combination of work between DLCD and Dogami that's really important. I'll throw in my idea that gets thrown melons at, but as we look to savings and efficiencies, we wonder if housing Dogami's science division to be a part of DLCD's GIS program ought not to occur. Should there be additional funds in the future, we believe it is time to update the climate change adaptation framework. You heard about that framework having been done, and there has been good things that have occurred as a result of that multi-agency collaboration around what climate change issues are in Oregon and how the different agencies ought to be dealing with at least the adaptation side, separate from actually dealing with the greenhouse gas situation. We are seeing that whole issue more and more with major drought of 2015, the huge rangeland fires, beach erosion, and flooding. We need to have that multi-agency conversation again. We, too, want to share our disappointment that the governor's budget didn't include the shared staffing between DLCD and Housing and Community Services. And I won't say more. Mary Kyle certainly said exactly what we would say about that issue. There has been some discussion in this committee about the role of regional solutions teams. And I want to make sure you understand the teams themselves are agency staff from ODOT, from DEQ, from Business Oregon, and from DLCD, and supposedly from OHCS, housing. The truth is, as far as I know, housing probably has maybe two staffers that try to participate statewide in those regional solutions teams. Those staffers are the same staffers that also are the regional reps that you've heard people talk about. So they're doing multiple duties. But it is a positive thing that these agencies are sitting around a table and working together on this on issues of regional concern. Our focus has always been on assuring that Oregon citizens know about the program, the Regional Solutions Advisory Committees, memberships and meetings, and assuring a provision for public comment as these committees set regional priorities, and expend state and staff time on regional projects. And by the way, in this budget, in the Business Oregon budget, there's $11 million for regional solutions program. I will tell you, those are lottery bond dollars, and what I have heard, because I call in and listen to these committees, is that there is more of a need for actual dollars, planning dollars to do things, rather than there are other ways and other places that they can get capital dollars, because that's what the lottery bonds are really supposed to be for. And by the time they get those lottery bonding dollars, the project, they've already found a different way to make that project happen, or the project isn't going to happen at all anyway. So I just want to make you aware as you take a, we support regional solutions teams. We have even supported additional staff in various natural resource agencies to accommodate this collaborative work done by those teams. But as you look for savings, we recommend that the full Ways and Means Committee take a second look at the Regional Solutions Advisory Committees. We're concerned that these RACs are doing priority setting without a full community region-wide discussion, and state monies and staff are expended without full legislative oversight. We note that the co-chairs have suggested a reduction in staffing in the office of the governor for these RACs, and by the way, that's where they're housed. I like to do connections. I don't like to testify one-on-one on budgets. So it's really important that we get out of silos and we talk about the whole way that state government works. We believe that local governments already meet together for other purposes, that the information needed by the regional solutions teams is already available without these committees, another layer of government, As we have testified in other budgets, agencies finding ways to work together is efficient, cost-saving, and provides the best outcome. The teams, yes. The RACs, maybe not so much. I will also make a couple of comments about what happens with these small natural resource agencies is that they do some sharing of HR, they do some sharing of payroll, and it changes over time, so I'm not sure, I'm not for certain, I think I heard yesterday that Water Resources is doing DLCD's payroll. It changes, but somehow or another we need to have that discussion about how best to provide those HR and payroll services for these small natural resource agencies. Lastly, Representative Esquivel, I wanted to address your Jackson County comment about the concern about the mapping. And the good news is, as far as I know in following the work, I believe Jackson County will be dealing with their mapping errors in the very near future.
Please, Representative Esquivel.
Now, we started the pilot partnership program 4 years ago, maybe something like that.
Yes.
It was a tri-county. It was Douglas, Jackson, and Josephine County, but I'm not sure how successful that was because I think two counties kind of complied and the other county went out on its own. So I don't know. We'll see.
So, Representative Esquivel, the good news in the bad news is that it is true that the three-county region-wide idea did not work out because a county is a county is a county, we've discovered in Oregon, and it's really difficult to make them a region-wide effort. The good news is that in Jackson County's case, they used that state money to do the good work of having the discussion about their county lands, and I do believe you will see an outcome that is positive.
Yeah, we have some good commissioners.
Yes, Senator Taylor, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I was just, if you probably know, I'm sure Peggy was here. I'm not sure if you were here. Hi, Mary Kyle, nice to see you. She's one of my neighbors. In the hearing that we had, I think it was yesterday or the day before, but DCLD, the shift in some of the FTE, some of the work of doing the work along the coast. And was that I'm just curious for either of you who are tracking this closely, was that a surprise to either of you that there was this shift for the focus being on planning for tsunami efforts and a tsunami and et cetera? Was that a surprise?
Cheers with Frederick and Senator Taylor. You mean in the governor's recommended mm-hmm. budget?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Was that a surprise for you?
Co-chairs, Senator Taylor, not so much. Mm-hmm. We actually had big conversations in 2015 around natural hazards. Mm-hmm. Now, it was greater than just the tsunamis, but it also talked about landslides and so on. Mm-hmm. And with the additional information about what is happening, I didn't realize she was doing it and certainly didn't advocate for it, but I also am not totally surprised. We have had, I believe, Tillamook County and Nesquin has done some of their work. Mm-hmm. We know the city of Seaside, thank goodness the kids of Seaside High School helped pass their bond to help move those schools out of the tsunami zone. But it was those kids, by the way, that did that work. I don't want to give them full credit, but it is that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. We can't, I sat in on the House Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee yesterday afternoon with Dr. Goldfinger and others. We can't ignore the crisis that could happen. If we had known 9/11 was going to happen, would we have done something different? This is Oregon's 9/11. The tsunami, the crisis of the potential earthquake and the tsunami. And so all of those things that all of these other cities and towns have said are good things and need to be done. This is a public safety issue.
Mm-hmm. It's Senator Taylor, we certainly have had those conversations about the need for additional funding. I think to see all of the funding go towards that was unexpected. But certainly there's been a request for additional increased funding for the coastal and for the wildfire issues, too, both of those issues.
Chair Witt, I was just curious, maybe staff or someone can explain. I was just wondering how that came to be, that there was this shift in the budget. I mean, I understand the need, mm-hmm. but how that came to be. It was just a little bit of quite
Cascadia Rising, I think, was one of the reasons.
For the governor's office. So.
That's what I'm saying. I think Cascadia the work of Cascadia Rising was probably one of those. I can't.
Mm-hmm. But I'll let staff answer.
Thanks.
Chair Waite, Co-Chair Frederick, Senator Taylor, the issue here is this is the governor's proposal. Mm-hmm. So it's not, the shift hasn't been made, but in the governor's budget, there has been a reduction in staffing and a couple of other areas and redirection of funding to grants and a position dedicated to dealing with coastal resilience. If you're looking for a specific reasoning on that, you could bring forward the CFO analyst and have them talk about the governor's proposal.
Mm-hmm. I'll leave that up to the co-chairs. I was just curious. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. From that meeting yesterday, it's pretty apparent that Southern Oregon has a big target on us, because according to the scientists, we have a 43% chance of having a devastating earthquake, whereas the farther north you go, the less the opportunity. Well, not opportunity, the less the fatal opportunity. And I don't know if it's I just couldn't believe it, but I mean, it's centered right in Southern Oregon. Gold Beach, Brookings, Medford, Grants Pass, we're right in the whack zone, is what I call it.
So co-chairs, Representative Esquivel, and we will remember that it frankly was not all that long ago that there was an earthquake that did damage down in one of those coastal communities where they had significant damage in just the harbor alone. No loss of life as far as I know. But that is one of the problems with Gold Beach's hospital. They had a choice. They could either put it in the tsunami zone or in the landslide zone. Or they could put it hundreds of miles away where the people aren't.
So. Anything additional? Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to comment on...
John.
You gotta earn that retirement, brother.
Mr. Chair, I'd submit I have earned it many times over. Co-chairs, member of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here on the DLCD budget. I'm in full agreement with most of what was said before. I won't belabor. I would like to take my time, though, to talk about a couple of things that I don't know that the committee's heard. First is, I just want to share my perspective. In all the years I've been working for this outfit, and by the way, I would be saying this if Director Rue and Assistant Director McLaren were not in the room. This agency is extraordinarily well run right now. And it's well run on diminished and diminishing, apparently, resources. And I'm not saying that because we've gotten 100% batting average at the DLCD for developers, but because it is being run following the law, not following an ideological bent. We get a fair shake. I think all sides are treated fairly and evenly by the commission and the staff. And it's extraordinary to watch that over the years, how personnel matter in this case. These folks are doing an excellent job, and I think that excellent work ought not be rewarded with budget cuts. I understand the funding situation this session, but these agencies, natural resource agencies, DLCD and the others, have historically been underfunded. You may have heard me say this in other contexts. The natural resource agencies are kind of budget dust in the grand scheme of things, and yet they collect 90-some percent probably of the political heat in this state, whether it be DEQ, DSL, DLCD, DAGAMI, you name it. And yet every session, people like me and the other stakeholders come up and say, we really need to fund these agencies adequately. And I, again, understand exactly the problem you're going to have trying to balance the budget. Don't lose sight of the fact that we have tasked these agencies with a critical task, not just following the law, implementing policies and all that, but the ethos of Oregon. When you think about Oregon, you think about natural resources, you think about the open spaces, you think about functioning cities, you think about our land use system, the beaches and all of that, and the agencies that are in charge of making sure that doesn't go backwards get short-hopped every single session. This session is no different. Programs that are important need to be paid for. and you're in Ways and Means, and I'm sorry that you showed up late for a caucus or whatever happened to you, but your task, and it's an unenviable one, is to figure out how to pay for important state programs. And frankly, then, if you don't mind, I can take your Ways and Means hat off. If programs which are cannot be paid for, then the program needs to be reevaluated. And that's beyond the scope of this committee, but it's not beyond the scope of other committees on which you sit. And I really do think it becomes that binary. There's been a whole bunch of bills already this session telling DLCD to do this or housing to do that or DEQ to do that and no money going along with it, which just simply compounds the problem. If it's important, we've got to figure out how to pay for it. If it isn't important, then we can't figure that out. You need to figure, then you need to do something about the program on the programmatic side. And in particular for this agency, the staff losses that are being proposed are simply unacceptable. You have gone beyond the, you know, there is no fat in this agency to begin with, and you, when you start taking people away and you don't remove the imperative, the work they're supposed to be doing, you're cutting deep into the muscle of the agency, which you've already heard. It affects their ability to do all sorts of things that we have told them are important to do. Specifically on this budget, with regard to the local planning grants, for example, the coastal communities have a problem ahead of them, to be sure, dealing with tsunamis. No one's going to dispute that. To answer Senator Taylor's question, I was shocked and astonished to see that come out, the shift out of the governor's budget. I wasn't consulted, which seemed odd because I sat by my phone constantly. But the fact that those are important issues doesn't mean there are not other important issues elsewhere in the state, and particularly in this case where, for the most part, cities and counties are implementing things the state told them to implement. And then for the state to tell them and to continue telling them to implement, whether it be periodic review or transportation system plans or housing analyses or what have you, for the state to keep telling them, you got to keep doing this and then take the money away, is frankly cheating. If you're going to tell them to do it, you got to give them the money. If you don't want to give them the money, I understand, tell them to quit doing it. And it really does break down almost that simply in my mind, that we have asked local governments to be the agents of the state of Oregon and carrying out various and sundry policies, particularly in the land use arena. It is essential to fund those because most of the cities and counties simply do not have the resources. They have their own set of fiscal constraints that they're struggling under, particularly in rural Oregon. This money needs to be made available from the state to match up with the policy requests, if not directives. On the housing side, last session, some of those of you who were here will remember we've had quite a tussle over various and sundry housing issues. We seem to be having another tussle gearing up this session. And I've mentioned this before as well. I don't mean to repeat, but I find it personally more than passingly ironic that housing is a big deal, capital B, capital D. Everybody's worried about it. Everybody talks about it. And yet there is no agency in the state of Oregon that is in charge of making sure that affordable housing can be planned for, funded, and built. LHCS doesn't have the resources anywhere near the need. DLCD is in charge of administering Goal 10, which is the housing goal, and yet the one budget piece that was going to give some staff support for that very important work seems to have evaporated someplace along the line. I believe that's a critically, frankly, it's a huge misstep. If we're going to solve the housing crisis, if we're going to provide tools to local governments, whether it be model ordinances or model house designs or whatever it might be, that's going to cost money in most cities and counties faced, as Ms. McCurdy pointed out. It is not a Portland Metro issue. It's a statewide issue. They don't have the resources for that either. I'll close by simply saying that if I can be helpful, and as you sort through this, please don't hesitate to call. This is a critical issue. This agency is critically important. We fight with them as often as we agree with them. It is a critical piece of Oregon's governmental structure. And I would like to see this committee and the full body recognize that and provide resources available necessary to get the work done. Be glad to take any questions.
John, thank you very much. Questions or comments? I'm not seeing any, but thank you very, very
thank
much.
You.
Anyone else from the public for comments on Senate Bill 5527? Last and final call. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5527. Coming attractions.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, members of the subcommittee, tomorrow you're going to beginning the public hearing for House Bill 5011, which is Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. That
The following Monday will also be a day for Dogami, primarily reserved for public testimony. Tuesday through Thursday of next week, we're going to begin the DEQ public hearing on their bill. That will carry all three of those days and carry over to the next week as well. Right before DEQ, we're hoping to hear, if staff can get the paperwork together, we're hoping to present you with a request from DLCD for a federal budget request or federal grant application request.
Great. Thank you very much. Good of the order. Senator Jarrett.
Yes, the director was good enough to answer my questions, and mm-hmm. that was on OLIS. If you people want to go on there, the average FTE cost was about $125,000.
You do pretty accurate and pretty fast, quick math.
Hey, I was impressed they got back.
Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, hearing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very, very much. And most appreciative of the public. And most appreciative of the public. And thank you all very, very much.